All right, Erev Tov, I thank you all for coming. We start tonight our new series entitled The Centurions. I want to thank, as in past years, Becky and Avi Katz for sponsoring it, Lili Nishmas Yonah Ben Rav Aryeh Leib. This series will examine the great people of Jewish history on the theory that great people make history. There is such a dispute amongst historians whether that in fact is true, whether great people make history or events make great people, or even whether one person can make a difference. So we subscribe to the former, that in fact great people can make history, that as John F. Kennedy said, one person can make a difference, and everyone should try. We have that in a magnet on our refrigerator. But also that history does follow, or our history does follow, an inexorable pattern that God ordains. So in fact, people matter. But if one person in particular would abdicate his role, then we say, Harbe Shulchem Lamakom, that God has many agents, and as Mordechai said in the Megillah, Revach Vatzaloi Amod LaYehudim Mimakom Acher. God has many means of effecting salvation, and if Esther doesn't want to do it, someone else will. But nonetheless, history can change based on who leads and how that person responds. So we're going to examine those people who, in each century, who left an enduring mark on Jewish life, whose force of personality shaped events. In other words, who is the person of whom it can be said that history lived through him or her, that he epitomized Jewish life with all its vicissitudes in that particular century? Who shaped events in that century and left an indelible mark on Jewish life, and who in fact created the patterns in Jewish life that exist until our day? So we start with the very first century of the Common Era, and like in the series we did 2 years ago on the 2000 years of Jewish Odyssey, of course, to look at Jewish history or recent Jewish history in terms of 2000 years is somewhat artificial, barring the Christian framework, but nonetheless it is easy for us to relate to, and especially our knowledge of history very often takes the form of the Christian dating rather than look back and say to the 37th or 38th century of Jewish life in which we are currently engaged. To say the 38th century may not mean much to many people. The first century was a momentous one, as in fact most centuries are for an ancient, eternal people. It began with the Jews under the thumb of Herod, and very soon the foot of Rome, with most of the people basking in the leadership of Hillel and Shammai as the Nasi and Avbeistin respectively, while they and the religious leadership struggled to keep the Tzadokim at bay. The Tzadokim, the followers of Tzadok, those Jews largely Hellenized or assimilated, and for the most part elitist, who rejected the Mesorah and its authority, and who, among other things, fostered the torment of the Prushim, even forcing them underground from time to time. Nonetheless, it was Hillel and Shammai who laid the foundation for the eventual recording of the Torah Shebaal Peh. First century, of course, was a century in which Jews lived through the birth and death of Jesus, which immediately had very little effect on Jewish life. Later on, of course, it would. But especially the Churban, the great catastrophe that resulted, just in shorthand, from the evil of Rome, but especially the civil war amongst the Jews, the factionalization of Jewish life that precluded any effective unified response. So in this century, for the first time since David HaMelech, the Jewish people had to adjust to a national existence, an extended period of national existence without a Beis HaMikdash, without Yerushalayim as the national center, and without any hope, or more to the point, any prophecy that either would be restored any time soon. Someone had to lead the Jewish people and underscore that Jewish life would change, but that the Jewish people were eternal. So adjustments had to be made, and they would be made, that would restructure Jewish life, that would assure our continued existence without the Beit HaMikdash, but retain our longings for its rebuilding, and also ensure that we would not go the way of every other conquered people of Rome. All other peoples either became slaves for extended period of times before becoming Roman citizens, or just became Roman citizens, and their national identity was for the most part lost. The person who would accomplish these goals in a way that resonates until today was, of course, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and he is our figure for tonight. Not much is known about his pedigree. He seems to have been raised in the Galil, and like many of his contemporaries, he did not immediately and exclusively dedicate his life to Talmud Torah. Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, Kol Shino Sov Shal Rabban Yochanan Zakkai Me'ov Esrim Shano. Rabban Yochanan was one of those great figures who lived 120 years, like Moshe, like Hillel HaZaken, and later like Rabbi Akiva. 120 years is a long time. Arba'im Shano Asak B'Prakmatya. For 40 years he was engaged in commerce. Arbim Shana Lamad, for 40 years he learned. Arbim Shana Limeid, for 40 years he taught. So his life therefore spanned most of the century, and we can estimate that he was born around the year 30 before the Common Era, and he lived to approximately 90 of the Common Era, meaning 20 years after the Churban. And we shouldn't think that he didn't learn for the first 40 years of his life. Allah Rabbi Akiva, who in fact wasn't Amoritz for 40 years, but rather he did learn, but he was also the Prakmatya, because in fact, in his position as a Rav in a town called Arav, in Galil HaTachton, in the Lower Galil, he wasn't kept very busy. You know, people often call up with shyness and apologize for bothering me or my colleagues. In 18 years, as the Rav in Galil Tachton, Rabban Yochanan says he was asked two questions. Two. That's an average of one every 9 years. And he lamented the profound ignorance in the Galil, so much for our nostalgia about ancient life, everybody was a Gaon and a Tzaddik. And when he left, he said about his Balabatim, Galil, Galil, Sinas HaTorah Sof HaLasos B'Mesikin. He said, people of the Galilee, your hatred of Torah is such that it will cause you to fall to your tormentors. And in fact, we'll see that Galil was the first part of Eretz Yisrael to fall to the Romans. That statement from Yerushalmi. When he left the Galil, finally returned to Yerushalayim, he became, for a short amount of time, just given the chronology, a Talmud of the great Hillel HaZaken. In fact, Rabban Yochanan was listed in the Gemara Sukkah Daf Chof Ches Amud Aleph as the youngest, or in fact the smallest in stature, of the Talmidim of Hillel. Note, Tana Rabbanan, Shmonim Talmidim Hayu Lel Hillel HaZaken. Hillel had 80 primary disciples. Shalshim Mehem Ruim Shetish Aleim Shechina Kamosh Rabbeinu. 30 of them were worthy that the divine presence should rest upon them as it did upon Moshe Rabbeinu. Shalshim Mehem Ruim Shetamod Lem Chama Keshur Ben Nun. 30 were worthy that the sun should stop for them, meaning miracles should happen, like it did for Yeshua Ben Nun. That's some sheer. And Esrim Beinonim, the 20 average Talmidim, not on that level. Gadol Shebekulon, the greatest of them, Yonasan Ben Uziel. Katon Shebekulon, the youngest or the smallest of them, was Rabban Yochanan Ben Zakkai. Imagine, that was some yeshiva that Hillel had. Omer Olav al Rabban Yochanan Ben Zakkai, they said of Rabban Yochanan, the Gemara lists this just so we should know, this is what the smallest Talmud in stature of Hillel HaZaken was like. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Shohiniach Mikra Umishna Talmud Halachos Vagados Dikdukes Torah Dikdukes Sofrim Kalim V'Chamurim Gzeros Shavos. He was at home in every area of Torah, Tanakh, Mikra, Mishnah, Talmud, Halachos, Agados, and note, almost all of the latter were not yet even in writing. Dikdukei Torah, Dikdukei Sofrim, how to derive the Oraisos, how to derive the Rabbanons, Kal v'chomers, Gzera Shavos, Tkufos u'Gematrios, how to calculate the seasons, the Tkufos, Gematrio, Sichas Malachi Ashores, Sichas Shedim, Sichas Tekolim, secular knowledge of physics, of botany, of the way of the world, Mesholos Kovsim, Mesholos Shualim, the parables of the launderers, the parables of foxes. Think of Aesop, who was a predecessor. He was able to speak in fables so people should understand him. Dover Gadol the Dover Katon, esoteric matters and simple matters. Dover Gadol, Maisa Merkava, metaphysics. Dover Katon, Havayos da Abaye Verovo, the machlokos that we find in the Gemara. Meaning he was at home familiar with every area of Torah knowledge and of secular knowledge. And that was the Gitanim amongst the Talmidim of Hillel HaZaken. He was able to expound the text. Rabbi Yochanan had a special propensity to ground his drushos in a pasuk, so people should not think that Torah Shebal Peh or Dikdukei Torah, Dikdukei Sofrim are just some drushos that people make up out of thin air, but he rooted it in psukim. And again, remember, Silol Bal Peh, and he had a very unique gift in articulating the ideas of Torah. That's all the mishalos he would use to teach Torah to people. That is greatness. It was a greatness that was recognized by Hillel, who said of him before Hillel died, as the officer of Nasa notes in Perikov Ches, therein, Bishas Patiraso, when Hillel was about to die, Nichnasu Kulam Vahulo Nichnas. Many people entered, and Rabban Yochanan stood outside, because he was the youngest of the Talmidim. He didn't enter to be in his Rebbe's presence. This is, by the way, around the year 10, around the year 12 of the Common Era. Omar Lohem, Hill said to his disciples, Heichan hu Yochanan? Where is Yochanan? Omrulo harehu omed ala Pesach. He's standing outside, he doesn't want to come in, doesn't want to assert himself. Omar Lohem, so Hill said to his other Talmidim, Yikanes kasherhu, let him come in, he's very fit, he's very appropriate, he should be at my deathbed. When he entered Amar Lohem, Hillel said to his other Talmidim about Rabban Yochanan and Zakkai, HaKotun Shebochem, the smallest amongst you, Avla Chochmo V'Avla Doros. He's a father to wisdom and a father to all generations, meaning he is destined for great leadership in the Jewish people. In fact, in chronological terms, Rabban Yochanan wasn't Hill's disciple for very long, but obviously he made a deep impression. So what do they see in Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai? So Gemara there in Sukkot, Daf Chafes Amar Aleph, continues, Omer Olav or Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai. They said of him, Miyamav lo sach sichas chulin. He never just engaged in idle, frivolous conversation. He didn't walk even four cubits without thinking some Torah thought and without wearing his tefillin. So his mind should not be disengaged from the study of Torah. No person ever preceded him to the Beis Medrash. He was always the one to unlock the door. So it's one thing to get there. People can get there and fall asleep too. None of you, of course. He never slept in the Beis Medrash. Not a nap, not a full sleep. He came early and he learned the whole day. But he did not meditate Torah thoughts in unclean places. Nor did he was always the last to leave the Beis HaMedrash as well. And no one ever saw him just, you know, hanging out, just sitting in his fender, looking out the window at the sights. He was always Yoshev Hashon, is constantly engaged in Torah study. So too, if a Talmud wanted to enter, was a knock at the door, he never said to a Talmud of his, go answer the door. He got up and opened the door himself. He never said anything he didn't hear from his Rebbe, Hillel. V'lo amar higia eis lamo mibes ha-medrash chutz me'arve psochem v'arve yom ha-kippurim. He never said it's time to close down the house of study. It's never time to close the Beis Medrash except Erev Pesach. Get ready. Erev Yom HaKippurim, you have to get ready as well. After Hillel's death, Rabban Yochanan remained in Yerushalayim and there he became renowned for his Torah teaching in a most exalted location. So Gemara says in Psochem Daf Chavav Amen Aleph, Omer Olav al Rabban Yochanan Zakai, Shehayoshe Bitzilo Shel Hechal V'Daresh Kol Yom Kulo. He would sit in the shadow of the wall of the sanctuary of the Beis Hamikdash, not even an outer wall, in the wall of the sanctuary, and there he would teach Torah. And as was customary for the finer Talmidim, he joined the Sanhedrin that sat for a very short time during his sojourn there in the Lishkas Hagozes, but then very soon exiled itself when the society deteriorated. So the Sanhedrin used to sit in a room, the chamber of the hewn stone, the Lishkas Hagozes, which straddled the area between the Azara and outside the Beis HaMikdash. There they decided capital cases and all types of other cases. So Gemara says 40 years before the Churban, already it exiled itself, so it should cease hearing capital cases. There are too many homicides. And the Gemara continues, this is in Sota now, when adultery became rampant in Jewish life, they stopped testing with the bitter waters that they would use on the Sota. It was Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, Rabbi, before he became a leader, he was one who stopped it, because when society is immoral, when society is extremely violent, so you need more than just the court system. Obviously you need a complete overhaul. Now it's important to recognize that all of Jewish society was not corrupt. We read about Nefisha Rotzim and the Rabu Hamenofim and we think society is completely lost. The fact is that the murderers and the adulterers predominated amongst the Tzadokim, amongst the Sadducees, and amongst the assimilated. But for the religious population, it was actually a time of spiritual grandeur, the century or the half century before the Churban Beis HaMikdash. We don't often think of it in those terms because we focus on the end of the famous Maimer and Chazal. But remember, Gemara says in Yoma, asking why the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So the first, they had their problems. Idolatry, immorality, homicide. But the Gemara says on Daf Tesam at Beis and Yoma, Avol Mikdash Sheni, Shehayu Oskim B'Torah, Uve Mitzvos, Uve Milas Chasodim, Mipnei Machorev. Gemara says in the second Beis of Mikdash era, they learned Torah. Torah scholarship was tremendous. Hill and Shammai and Rabbi Yochanan and his Talmidim, that was the era before the Churban. You had great scholars and people engaged in Torah study and people involved in mitzvos and people involved in Gemilas Chasodim as well. So the Gemara continues, and that's the part we focus on. Why was the Mikdash destroyed? Because of Sin Hasina. We'll return to that, but let's not forget the first part of the sentence. This era was one of great Torah scholarship and observance. The vulnerabilities lay in that segment of society that had already rejected the Torah. As his fame grew, Rabban Yochanan attracted the cream of the Torah scholars of Jewish life, and it was during this time that Rabban Yochanan taught his five primary Talmidim, as the Mishnah in the second parak of Avos notes. Chamisha Talmidim Hoyulo Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai Ve'ilu Hein. Rabbi Eliezer Ben Hurkanus came from a wealthy family, but when he wanted to learn Torah, his father completely cut him off, so that he became destitute, had no means of sustenance. So much so, Gemara tells a story, Rabbi Yochanan was learning with him once late, And Rabbi Eliezer fainted. He hadn't eaten the whole day because they had no money for food. So he took him home and gave him food as well. Rabbi Shua ben Hananya, who would figure in so many events after the Churban. Rabbi Yossi HaKohen. Rabbi Shima ben Esanel. And of course, the greatest of all of them, as the Mishnah says, Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch. These five, the Talmidim of Rabbi Yochum and Zakkai, would later become Migdolei HaTanoim and the very foundation of the Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan also became in that time, this is again pre-Churban, the 40 years before the Churban, a very vocal antagonist of the Sadducees, and the Talmud records a number of very sharp disputes between Rabbi Yochanan and the Tzadokim, who were very powerful and very influential and very well represented among the ruling elite. The famous machlokos that we know about between the Purushim and the Tzadokim, they were the ones in which Rabbi Yochanan got involved and his will prevailed. Now granted, we have to understand that the Tzadokim had the potential to diminish the people's devotion to the Mesorah. It's an issue in every generation. All you need is a beard, a yarmulke, and a title, and you could basically say whatever you want for or against the Mesorah, and people will follow you. It was Rabbi Yochanan who challenged them. For example, on when Shavuos falls, the Gemara Menachos, Daf Sanachem et Aleph, they said always had to be on a Sunday. And Rabbi Yochanan proved, no, it depends on whenever the calendar, whenever it falls. Mimachas HaShabbos doesn't mean it's the day after Shabbos. And on the case of Yerushas Habas, they held that a daughter inherits with a granddaughter the daughter of a son. And he proved that was also wrong. And others, each case where the Tzadokim deviated from the Mesorah, they were challenged by Rabban Yochanan until it became clear that they had no legs on which to stand. He also very slowly effectuated the displacement of the Kohanei Tzadokim, the priests who were Sadducees, unfortunately the majority of the priests who served in the Beis HaMikdash, with Purushim who obeyed the Halacha, even though it didn't ultimately save the Beis HaMikdash. Now that particular struggle had a far-reaching effect on Jewish life and paid dividends, because in the ensuing decades, the Tzadokim's influence on Jewish life waned, and with the Churban and the severance of their ties with their Roman patrons, they ceased to be a factor in Jewish life. And you don't really hear the Tzadokim for too long after the Churban. Very soon, Rabbi Yochanan was appointed the head of what was called Beis Hillel, the school of Hillel that followed Hillel's views, especially the great machlokas with Beis Shammai, and very shortly thereafter he assumed what would be his formal position in Jewish life, and that was the Avbeistin of the Sanhedrin, the Avbeistin to the Nasi, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. It could be he served for a time under Rabbi Gamliel as well. Rabbi Gamliel, who was Hillel's son, Rabbi Gamliel HaZaken, died in around the year 50 of the Common Era, and Rabbi Shimon succeeded him. Now note, Rabban was a special title given to Nasiim. Contrary to an urban myth, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai was never a Nasi. The Nasi was always a descendant of David HaMelech, but in fact Rabbi Yochanan was honored with the title when he assumed some of the responsibilities of the Nasi, and because of his stature in the people. This story, of course, now coincides with the looming of the Churban, when the Nasi went into hiding and Rabbi Yochanan became the leader of Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Yochanan was one of those giants who foresaw the impending Churban long before it happened, like Reb Tzadok. The Gemara says Reb Tzadok started fasting 40 years before the Churban in the hope of averting the decree. That's one long fast, 40 years. So too the Gemara Yomar relates in Daf Lamed Tesem at Beis that 40 years before the Churban, the Lashon Zahoris, the crimson thread that would turn white on Yom HaKippurim as a sign of forgiveness, would turn white on Yom HaKippurim as a sign of forgiveness, it stopped changing color. And the Ner Maravi and the Echal would not burn. And the doors of the Echal would just suddenly fling themselves open, as if inviting the enemy in. Ad she'gar bohen Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai, until these gates, the doors, were rebuked by Rabban Yochanan, who said to them, Heichal, Heichal, Mipnei Matam Mavis Atzmecha, Heichal, Sanctuary, why are you scaring us? Yodea Ani Becha, Shesocha Asid Lecharev. I know that in the end you're going to be destroyed. There's no need. You can't even intimidate the people into Tshuva. The society is too dysfunctional to change. Now, the decades before the Churban, a time of great Talmud Torah in Jewish life, society collapsed in a wave of sinas chinam. Not baseless hatred or causeless hatred as people understand it. Every hatred has a reason for it. We're not insane. But rather, sinas chinam means a self-destructive hatred. Self-destructive means if I don't have my way, then I don't care what happens. That's self-destructive. Jewish people irrevocably split into different factions. One group were called the Friends of, was called the Friends of Rome. They're assimilated Hellenist Sadducees. Another group of Biryonim, Zealots, who themselves were divided into various groups. Another group of Prushim, who headed the Sanhedrin and cared for religious life. There were those who wanted war, those who wanted to become Romans, and those who wanted peace, some accommodation with Rome in which Jewish life could continue. The problem, of course, was, and this is part of the sinas chinam Chazal referred to, is that these groups were at war with each other even before they would fight Rome. And in fact, the groups together, the Jews would never unite to fight Rome, and therefore they did not stand a chance. Gemara says, of course, that the Zealots even burned the storehouses of grain that could have sustained the people for decades, all in order to provoke a war, which they thought that God would swoop down, intervene on their behalf, and destroy the Roman Empire. Well, they initiated a revolt in the year 66 of the Common Era that caused the general Vespasian to come from the north, invaded with the Roman legion in 67, very quickly conquering the Galil and then heading south. As tensions grew, the Nasi was forced into hiding. Rabban Shimon Gamliel had succeeded his father, Rabban Gamliel as Zaken, about 20 years before the Churban. It seems Rabban Shimon went into hiding, as Rabbi Yochanan assumed many of the duties of leadership. But in the end, as we know from our Tfilos, the Slicha we say on Yom Kippurim and the Keen on Tisha B'Av, Rabban Shimon was killed, murdered by the Romans around the time of the Churban as well. So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai took the reins of power, and his legendary greatness and his historic importance emerged. Note Rabban Yochanan, in numerous statements in the Chazal attest to this, was a peaceful person. And he wanted to achieve some type of rapprochement with Rome, but he could never persuade the others to go along. He was always in the peace camp. He always wanted some accommodation that would allow Jewish life to continue. Remember, the Romans had dominated Jewish life in Israel for more than a century already, since the time of Pompey. But Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai saw the end coming. He saw that the Jews could no longer sustain either independence or autonomy. He saw that because of their internal corruption, the Beis HaMikdash could not be saved. And he saw as well, not the least of it, that the Jewish people would destroy themselves if the Romans didn't do it first. That is when he acted both faithfully and presciently. So Gemara says in Gittin Daf Nunvav Amid Aleph, the famous story, Rabban Yochanan consulted his nephew Abba Sikra, who was the head of the Zealots. Abba Sikra was a Shtikl Chacham as well, and he realized that the Zealots could not win. Why then didn't he go over the camp of his uncle? Because he said that the other Zealots would kill me. That's always the problem with Zealots. No matter how many Zealots you have, there's always someone who's more zealous than the Zealots. So he was the head of the Zealots, but he could not influence them or change them. Together they devised a scheme to bring about what Rabban Yochanan called a Hatzola Purta, a small salvation. Abba Sikra arranged for word to be spread that Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai had died and that his body would be carried out of the city. The city was barricaded already by the Zealots. carried out by his disciples, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Hananya, and in fact it succeeded. They brought the beer to the Roman commander, Vespasian. He arrived, I'm shortening the story somewhat, and Rabbi Yochanan said to Vespasian, Shalom Aleich Malka, Shalom Aleich Malka, peace upon you, O king, peace upon you, O emperor, to which Vespasian objected, of course. He felt it was laissez majesté, he wasn't the emperor, even though he was waiting for and expecting news that the Roman Senate had elected him emperor. Now that year, 69, some of you may recall, was a very momentous year in the Roman Empire. It was known as the year of the four emperors, because two had died, one was on the verge of being killed, and then there was Vespasian. So in fact, it was late in the year, it was December of 69 apparently, when this meeting took place, while they were talking, the Gemara says, in that same moment, a messenger arrived from Rome with the news that indeed Vespasian had been crowned emperor over Vitellius, who is either dead or deposed. In gratitude, he said, Rabbi Yochanan said to him, I knew that you had to be the king because Yerushalayim could not fall into the hands of a commoner. You could only be a melech based on the psukim. In gratitude, Vespasian said to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, Boy minai midi de'eteloch, ask me something and I'll give it to you. Omar lei, now he said these very fateful words, Tein li yavne v'chachomeho, give me Yavne and its wise men. Meaning, let me preserve the transmission of Torah in Jewish life. No threat to Rome. At least then, they did not perceive it as a threat to Rome, although they would in the next century. Mishal Shilter the Rabban Gamaliel, if Rabban Shimon had already been killed, then in fact it was only his son, Rabban Gamaliel, known later as Rabban de Yavne, who would be a successor, who in fact was the end of the chain of Malchus Beis David. He said, preserve that. Not because we aspire to monarchy or to rule, but just because this is a noble institution in Jewish life. And finally he asked for Asvata de Masen le Rabbi Tzadok. He asked for a doctor who would heal Reb Tzadok, who was completing his 40th year of fasting. That's what he asked for. Now, the Gemara continues, Kora Aleir of Yosef, Yitem Rabbi Akiva, they said about him, a pasuk from Yeshayo, Meshiv Chacham Mochor V'daitam Yisachol, that sometimes God turns the mind of a Chacham backwards, and he takes his wisdom and turns it into foolishness. And Rabbi Akiva especially said, Ibai lemeimar leilis shafkinu hadazimna, if it was such a shasa kosher, if it was such an opportune moment, any wish could be granted, so he should have asked for reprieve, one last reprieve for Yerushalayim and the Mikdash. The Hu Sovar, and Rabbi Yochanan thought, and indeed it was a momentous decision, and it was pretty much on the spot, Dilma Kule Hai Lo'ovid, maybe he'll just deny that, because he'll perceive that as a threat to Rome. Vatsala Purta Nami Lo'ave, and that small salvation that I sought would also not be granted. In essence, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai sacrificed the Beis HaMikdash and Jewish sovereignty over the land of Israel in exchange for the preservation of Torah and for Malchus Beis David. Not to over-dramatize it, but you could make a very good argument that this was the most critical decision ever made in Jewish life. And just as obviously, not everyone was enamored with it. A lot of his colleagues disagreed, as you see with Rav Yosef later on, but Rabbi Akiva, who was a younger contemporary, and in fact, even Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai was always unsure whether he had made the right choice. Who knows? So I think I read this in the writings of Rav Soloveitchik. The famous story the Gemara tells about the deathbed of Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. It's in Brachos Daf Chav Chesam at Beis. On his deathbed, with his students gathered around him, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai was crying inconsolably. And he said a number of things. They asked, why are you crying? And he said, I'm crying because if I was going before a king of Basar V'dam, of flesh and blood, so what could he do to me? He's here today, he's gone tomorrow, so whatever he says, it doesn't matter, and there's always the next world. But now I'm going before the Melech Malchem Lochem, So his kas is kas olam, it's eternal. What am I going to say? What can I do? And then he said, v'lo od, el she'esh l'fon ha'shnei drachim, there are two paths in front of me. Achashel shel gan eden, v'achashel gehenom. One path leads to gan eden, and the other to gehenom. Ve'eni yodeh be'ezo molichim osi. I don't know which path they're taking me on. Well, the Bali Musa, of course, loved the statement, because if Rabban Yochanan could say on his deathbed, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, of whom we read all the accolades before, that he doesn't know where he's going, Gan Eden and Gehenom, so what in the world does that say about us? Velo Efke, and I shouldn't cry, but Zerov, and others too. I don't remember, I don't want to quote idly who it was, but it wasn't just that he was afraid, Gan Eden and Gehenom. Is that there are two paths. And in fact, he had two paths in front of him when he made that decision. Sometimes man is forced to make a decision and he doesn't know if it's the right one. And only the Hashgacha will determine, in fact, whether it's the right one. But at the time, Rabbi Yochanan didn't know. I don't know if I'm the savior of Klal Yisrael. I don't know if I'm the destroyer of Klal Yisrael. Velo Efke. And I shouldn't cry? Well, he didn't know, but history decided. I'll tell you a story. About 30 years ago, I was in Israel for the summer, late 70s, early 80s, I don't remember exactly when. And on Tisha B'Av, I think it was nighttime, I'm after Kinos, I put the television on. Back in those days, there were only one or two channels in Israel, so it was all appropriate programming for Tisha B'Av. They had on a fascinating panel discussion. They brought in four people, dignitaries in Jewish life, and they discussed the events leading up to the Churban and the various factions in Jewish life, and they discussed with whom did they most identify. So you had the leftists, the two leftists on the panel whose names escaped me, and they said that they would have been friends of Rome. They're assimilated. They don't have much of the Torah today. They would try to make some accommodation for Rome to become Romans. They don't need this nationalism, this parochialism. The two other people I remember very vividly. One was Gula Kohen, the old Irgun firebrand, the radio operator, part of the Atchia party in the 80s and early 90s, mother of Tzachi Hanegbi. And she said she would have been one of the zealots. So the moderator said to her, but the zealots provoked the war. You can't give in. You cannot surrender. You must fight. And the fourth was Rav Hanan Parat. And Hanan Parat said that, what is this discussion? Of course I would have identified with Rabban Yochanan and Zakkai. It's because of him that we're here today. Because he was able to save the people and restructure Jewish life. And he pointed to his face, he said, he is clean shaven to this day. But he said, I have a beard now. Why do I have a beard during these 3 weeks? I have a beard mourning the Churban only because of what Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai did. Because if not for him, who knows what would have happened to Klal Yisrael. Rabban Yochanan and Vespasian had met in December of 69 of the Common Era. Vespasian soon left, sailed back to Rome to assume his duties there. He served as the emperor a little less than a decade. The battle for Yerushalayim began after Pesach of the year 70. On Shavuos v'Tammuz, the walls of the city were breached. Late in the afternoon of the 9th of Av, the Beis HaMikdash was set on fire. Rabban Yochanan was already in Yavne. He never went back to Yerushalayim for safety's sake. The Jews would threaten him, not the Romans. And as Avos Rav Nosson reports in Perek Galud, Ba'osa Shon Nilkada Yerushalayim, at that moment when Yerushalayim was conquered, V'ahoy Rabban Yochanan Zakkai Yoshev U'mitzapeh V'choreid Keder Shaya Eli Yoshev U'mitzapeh. Rabban Yochanan sat getting reports of the fighting, waiting, trembling over the news that would come. He knew it was coming. Just like Eli HaKohen with the Mishkan in Shiloh. Same thing. Remember, he heard the news and he fell backwards and broke his neck. Kevan Sheshomer Rabban Yochanan and Zakkai Shehecher Es Yerushalayim V'Sarf Es Beis HaMikdash Ba'esh. As soon as he heard Yerushalayim was destroyed and the Mikdash burnt, Kara B'Gadov, he tore his garments. Karu Tamidov Es Bigdehem, his disciples tore their garments. For you bochen v'tzaken v'soften, they were crying and screaming and mourning and eulogizing the Beis Hamikdash. Omar, they quoted the pasuk in Zechariah, which presaged the Churban. Psach levanon de lasecha. Levanon, euphemism for the Beis Hamikdash. Ahor atol ezevah levanon. Levanon, open your doors. V'sochal esh ba'arazecha. And let fire consume your cedar. And the Gemara continues, these were the Medrash rather, continues, these were the Kohanim who stood down in the Beis HaMikdash as it was in flames, with the keys to the Beis HaMikdash in their hands, the Zark and Klapei Male threw the keys to heaven, V'omrim L'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Heilach Maftichosecho, here are your keys to the Beis HaMikdash, Shemosartalon, that you gave to us. We weren't faithful treasurers. Lasos meleches hamelech, to do the work of the king. Lecho mishulchan hamelech. So here, take your keys back. Rabban Yochanan cried. The Tamidim cried. The Kohanim cried. The Medrash continues. Avram Yitzchak v'Yaakov v'Shemos Hashvatim. Are you boken v'tzaken v'soften? Everyone was crying. Everyone was in mourning. But as we know, that's not the end of the story. It could have been. For other nations, it would have been, and in fact was. But not here. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai reconstituted Jewish life in Yavne, where the Sanhedrin sat once again, where the Torah was taught, and where adjustments were made. Clustered around him were his five primary disciples, and many others, I noted before, became the Talmud of the Mishnah. Soon, when they had 71 in total, that became the Sanhedrin of Yavne. It was here that Rabban Yochanan designated Rabban Gamliel, who came out of hiding as the new Nasi. Tremendous act of humility. In a sense, he deposed himself, feeling himself not worthy to be the Nasi because he wasn't from Beis David. It was here in Yavne that Abasko resolved the long-running machlokos between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, Elu ve'elu diver lekim chayim alochu ke Beis Hillel, meaning after the Churban, you couldn't have such divisions in Jewish life anymore. You could discuss anything in theory. It's diver lekim chayim, but you need to have a psak halacha so you shouldn't fragment. Rabban Yochanan really had three goals in Yavne. One was to strengthen the Torah. The second was to remember the Mikdash, but not to obsess over it. To reorient Jewish life away from the Beis HaMikdash. And thirdly, to root out heresies. So Torah and Mitzvot became the center of Jewish life. Not the Mikdash, and not nationalism. Until another day, much later. Much, much later, Rabban Yochanan de-emphasized the Beis HaMikdash and messianism. He did his level best to dampen any type of Mashiach fervor to the extent that's cited in Avos Reb Nosson in Perek Lamed Aleph in the second Nuscha. Im hoiso netia besoch yodcha, if you're holding a sapling in your hand, meaning about to plant it, the yomru lecha, harei lecha Mashiach, and someone says to you that Mashiach has come, bo unetas anatiya, first plant what you have in your hand, v'achar kach tzei v'hak bilo, then go out and greet the Mashiach. They weren't singing, we want Mashiach now, in Rabban Yochanan's time. They weren't that frivolous. They're a little more focused. Furthermore, again in Avos Reb Nosson, in Perek Dalet, Pamachas, Hoy Rabban Yochanan Zakkai Yotzei Yerushalayim, he's in Yerushalayim, and Rabbi Yeshua was with him. V'iros Beis HaMikdash Chorev, they saw the ruins of the Beis HaMikdash. Amar Rabbi Yeshua, Oy Lonu Al Zeh Shehu Chorev, woe to us, this place is desolate. Mekom Shenechaperban Avonosem Shal Yisrael, this place where Jewish sins were atoned for. That was Rabbi Yeshua. Amar Lo, so Rabban Yochanan said to his Talmud, Bini, Al Yeira Lecha, don't let it grieve you. Yesh Lanu Kapora Acha Sheika Moso. We have an atonement that's just the same as the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. Ve'ezeh, what's that? Zeh Gemilus Chasodim. Doing kindness for other people. That's the same as any karbon. Whole purpose of the karbon The Avodas HaKarban was to internalize certain ideas about God to make us better people. When it became just an exercise in superficialities and nothing was internalized, it wasn't useful anymore. It wasn't functional. So then we had to go back to the essence. The essence always was Gemilas Chasadim. Well, Mr. Reb Nosson in Perek Dalet has an account, similar in most details, different in some, of the encounter with Vespasian. But Veri had one request that really sums up what he was trying to accomplish. He said to Vespasian, "What do you want?" And he answered, "Eini mevakesh mimcha el Yavne. I just want Yavne. She'elech ve'eshna bo l'talmidai. I'll go there and teach my students. Ve'ekba bo tfilo. I'll ordain there the tfilos. And they all perform all the mitzvahs." Amar lo, the Vespasian said, "Lech, go. No sweat off my back. Kol masha tarot lasas asay. If that's all you want, if all you want is to learn Torah and to daven and to do mitzvahs," he said, "Degas unterhead," to the Latin equivalent. Immediately, you see from the text of that medrash, Ekba bo tfilo, Rabban Yochanan immediately intuited that tfilo would become the substitute for the avodah. He knew immediately that if he emphasized Talmud Torah, that would be the center of Jewish life. And so he transformed the coastal town of Yavne into the national spiritual center. In essence, the center became wherever Jews learn Torah and serve God. And in a very real sense, that has been the pattern until this century. As the Av Beis Din, he made a number of takanos, 9 in all, some zecher l'churban, some zecher l'mikdash, they're not quite the same. Zecher l'mikdash means it's a way of incorporating aspects of the life of the Mikdash into our Avodas Hashem so that it should not be lost and so that the flavor of certain days should remain as Jews remember them. So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Chof Tes Amud Beis, and a few Dafim Vens mentions a number of them. So for example, Rabban Yochanan directed, ordained, that the shofar be blown in Yavne on Rosh Hashanah that falls on Shabbos, just like in the Beis HaMikdash they blew the shofar when Rosh Hashanah fell on Shabbos. And then in fact, in the language of the Mishnah, in every town that had a Beis Din, wherever there was a Beis Din, that is to say, whenever there was a town where Lima Torah was central, you could blow the shofar Rosh Hashanah Shecholias B'Shabbos. Second, Sheyehe Lulav Nutal B'Medina Shiva Zecher L'Mikdash. The Dalet Minim would be taken for 7 days in Israel, outside the Beis HaMikdash. Previously, the Torah says, "Ukachtem lachem bayom rishon." Only took the Dalmi in the first day of Sukkos. It was only the Beis HaMikdash who was taken 7 days. Nah, he said, you have to preserve Sukkos the way people remember it, to give it chashivos, and that's why until today we take the lulav and esrog for all 7 days of Yom Tov. The Shehe Yom Hanef Kulo Asur, the day of the waving of the Omer, Tes Zayin Nisan. So he ordered that the Chadash, the new grain, could not be consumed, would be prohibited all of Tes Zayin Nisan, as opposed to the way it was before, once they brought the Omer in the morning. Why? The Gemara asks. So he answered, Meheru Yibana Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt speedily. The Yomru, and they will say, Eshtekad, last year, Milo Achalu Mishaher Mizrach. Well, I remember eating the new grain in the morning. But that was because they brought a karbon. Achshav Nami Nechol. Now we'll eat as well. What does all this mean? Notice the balance between living without the Mikdash and incorporating elements of that experience into Jewish life, and assuming that it will be rebuilt someday. Instilling in the Jewish people the notion of Mehera Yibone Beis HaMikdash. That didn't have to be the norm of Jewish life. It became the norm because Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai made it the norm. There are a few others as well. He ordered that the witnesses for Kiddush HaChodesh, for sanctifying the new moon, could testify all day, not just in the morning. They could go wherever any Beis Din was, the Beis Hadad, not just where the Nasi was. They could not be Mechal Shabbos as they had permission before, except for the months of Tishrei and Nisan, because then you needed to know for Yom HaKippurim and for Pesach. He even ordained the sotot of Memo Medeis that Kohanim should not duchen wearing shoes. Why? I mean, barefoot, as we see. So Gemara says the reason is because if a Kohen shoelace, if he's wearing shoes and his shoelace became undone, and he would kneel to tie it during the bracha, so people would think that he's not saying the bracha, he must be a ben grusha, ben chalutza. That's the reason the Gemara gives in Sota. I can't help but think that it was to duplicate the Nesias Kapayim in the Beis HaMikdash, where of course the Kohen were barefoot like everyone in the Azara. So that at that moment of divine blessing, Birchas Kohanim, when we have a direct connection to the Shekhinah, then and there we would relive the Mikdash experience. And of course he had others too, other takanos. The Tarshav Al Peh was itself revitalized in Yavne with one great day that Talmud refers to as Oso Hayom. On that day, it was the day that they spoke about for centuries afterwards, when Talmidim came forward with their traditions. The Sanhedrin itself weathered a storm, a revolt against the Nasi Rama Gamliel, and the whole Maseches Avios was taught when the doors of the Beis Medrash opened to everyone who had a Mesorah to relate. There in Yavne, they dealt a final blow to the Sadducees, the Tzadokim, and there they began to deal with the new threat, the early Christians who saw themselves as Jews but followed a dead Messiah. And it was then and there that Shmuel HaKotam composed the 19th bracha of the Shmon Esrei, V'la Malshinim, as a warning and a curse of the slanderers of that new sect. And it was there in Yavne that the seeds were planted for a rejuvenation of Jewish life in a way that would sustain us until today, all under the guidance of an inspiration of Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai. It was his disciple, by the way, Rabbi Yeshua, who stopped people from abstaining permanently from meat and wine, Zecher L'Churban. And you had this, the Gemara in Baba Basra of Samach HaMebeis relates that people were just naturally besides themselves. They stopped eating meat because of the mourning over the loss of Karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, and stopped drinking wine because there were no longer Nesachim in the Beis HaMikdash, libations. So Yeshua said to them, well, if that's your paradigm, you should stop eating bread, lechem aponim. You should stop having fruit, bikurim. Stop having water, nisuch hamayim. What he said struck a chord, and he said to them, look, shelo lehistabel kol iker hiyavshar. You can't not mourn. That's something. Shekar nigzor gzeiro. The decree is there. We have to find appropriate ways of mourning. Ulis abel yosemidai iyashar. To mourn too much, you also can't do. Shengozin gzeiro at tzibur. Elam kain robat tzibur yechom lamod ba. We don't decree anything that most of the tzibur cannot withstand. That is to say, you need a healthy balance between remembering and mourning the past and not being able to live normal lives. To wallow in mourning would have destroyed Klal Yisrael. That right balance. And we have Ephraim Makle Beresh Chosin at a wedding. The Chosin puts on ashes, and we leave a square Amma on plaster. We leave something off an adorned dining room table, etc. We have the means of doing it, but none of those means interfere in a dramatic way with a person's ability to enjoy Simchas HaChaim. And it was of course in Yavne that Jewish people, the Jewish leadership, came to grips with the strife that had driven apart the nation. This beautiful statement in Brachos Daf Yud Zayin Aleph, Margala Bifumai D'Rabbanan D'Yavne. It was the rabbis in Yavne who routinely said, Ani Birya V'Chaveri Birya. I am a creature and my friend is a creature. We're all creatures of God. Ani Malachti Ba'ir. I work in the city, in an office, he works in the field. He gets up early to go to work, I get up early to go to work. I don't interfere with his work, he doesn't interfere with my work. We all have lives. Vishema Tomar, Ani Marbe Vahu Mamit. I do more, I learn more, I daven better, I give more tzedakah than he does. Shanina, we've learned, Echora Marbe, Echora Mamit, Ulovad shechavin libo l'shamayim. Whether you do a lot or a little, the most important thing is to do it for the sake of heaven. So a few years before he died, Rabbi Yochanan left Yavne. He moved to Bror Chayil, a kibbutz in the south, not far from Sderot, still today called Bror Chayil. He moved there, likely to allow Rabbi Gamliel to serve as Nosi without the burden of Rabbi Yochanan's aged and sage presence. And there he lived until he died at age 120. He was buried in Tveria. The Rambam's grave is, of course, very nearby where Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was buried, one of the legendary figures in our history. Rabbi Yochanan was revered for his humility, never seeking the position of Nasi himself. It's more important what he did than the title he held. Revered for his humanity. Gemara in Brachos, Daf Yizayim and Aleph, there says, Omer Olov, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, Shelo hitimo adam shalom me'olam, afil nachri bashuk. No one ever said hello to him first. He greeted everyone first, even a non-Jew in the marketplace. Interesting, when you put that together with the fact that he's not walking Dalet Amos below Torah, below Tillin, so how is he greeting all these people in the even the Nochri Bashuk? So the answer is, it's no contradiction. And if you feel that it is a contradiction, you have no Torah and you should take off the Tillin. Because there is no contradiction between proper respect for other human beings and one's ability to engage in Torah. And of course, the centrality of Torah, says in Avos, Im lamadata Torah harbe, al tachazik tov al atzmecha, ki lakach natzarta. If you've learned a lot of Torah, don't be so haughty. You were created for that purpose. You're only doing that for which you were created. And above all, we remember Rabbi Yochanan until today for his accomplishments for the Jewish people. On his deathbed, the story I cited earlier, as he was crying, and his disciples said to him, why are you crying? They prefaced it by saying, Rebbe, Ner Yisrael, that's where the phrase is from, by the way, Ner Yisrael, light of Israel, Amud Hayemini, right wing pillar, Patish HaChazak, you strong, powerful hammer, why are you crying? What are these phrases? Rav Kook explains in Ein Ayah, he was the Ner Yisrael. That is to say, he was the vessel that illuminated all of Jewish life when everything was dark. He was Amud Hayamini. There are two pillars in Jewish life. There's the national political life of the Jewish people. That's the left pillar. It always seems like it's the left pillar anyway. But the right pillar, the Amud Hayamini, that's the eternity of Torah. So you're the Amud Hayamini, even if now the Amud HaSmali is gone. And even without sovereignty, the Torah remains. And you're also the Patish HaChazak, you're the mighty hammer that built an edifice of Jewish life that in 2,000 years, in over 19 centuries since, all our enemies have not been able to demolish. What did he leave his Talmidim with? He warned them, Yiratzon, Shetehei Mora Shamayim Alechem Kemora Basar Vadom. He said, your fear, your reverence for heaven should be as great as your reverence for mankind. And they were horrified. It should be the opposite. He said, Halavai, you should fear God as much as you fear man. What man will say, what man will do. That's how sadly even his disciples thought. Kal v'chomer, how we think in our day. And as he breathed his final breath, he told them to panu kelim, to remove the vessels from the house, so they should not become impure. V'chinu kisei l'chizkiyah melch Yehuda shebo, prepare the throne for Chizkiyah, the ancestor of Mashiach who's coming. That is to say, Jewish sovereignty may have temporarily ended, but it will most assuredly return after many centuries and much suffering. It will return. That we are on the verge of that era is a testament to the greatness and to the enduring legacy of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. I thank you all very much for coming.